Hi, Redbeard.
Hi, Patty. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Great. I've been eavesdropping, a little perverted eavesdropping on the festivities, and it sounds really good. I really appreciate you doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing this. A couple of disclaimers at the top end here, Patty. I understand that I'm last in line in this cattle call.
That's right. But so, we heard you were very nice.
I'll try to be. I guess this makes me the horse's patootie, and I'm really sorry that I'm probably going to ask you some questions that you've already answered about 10 times this morning. But hey, that's what happens when you're a rock and roll star, right?
But we save the best for last.
Oh, great! Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that a whole lot. The other disclaimer I want to make at the top end is this is on tape, so if I If I ask any stupid questions that cause those looks over at Dia Stein, like where did you get this guy, it's not her fault.
Okay.
It's my fault. Okay. You said in a recent interview that you wanted to make an emotionally honest record. Why is that important to you?
Those were just the kind of records when I was young and I listened to affected me the most and inspired me the most. And when I was a kid, listening to like Neil Young or Joni Mitchell, Laura Nero, Bob Dylan, and those records. I liked a lot of music, but those specifically, the singer-songwriter category, just really spoke to me. And then I was thinking, gee, I want to grow up, make a record. I'd like to make a record that's in that vein.
That's of course it's super admirable, but it also carries some risk with it. It's kind of vulnerable, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I guess it is in any circumstance when you're writing, you know, close to the bone. But then, you know, my marriage to Bruce and stuff made it a little more complicated. That was not an anticipated thing, so it made it a little more complicated. But I feel good about the record that I made.
You should feel very good about the record you made. I was late for lunch yesterday because of Patty Scalfa, because I couldn't get away from the albums. Like, well, I'll just listen to one more song, you know. And they just kept coming and coming and coming. It's a wonderful album. Do you feel that possibly there is some linear aspect to this album? In other words, as good as the songs are, as they stand on their own, I got the feeling by listening to the album in the way that it's sequenced that there's a thread there, almost a maturation or a growth process.
Yeah, that was. I'm glad you feel that way. That was intentional. Do you know?
It was
definitely. And then sequencing the record, I tried to sequence it as clear as I could without, you know, some things just naturally don't go well back to back just musically. But as far as the story was concerned, I tried to stay true to the sequence of where I felt emotionally when it started, which was with Rumble Doll, to the end, a Spanish Dancer. So I was trying to tell one whole story with several tunes.
It's interesting. Now, you know, you mentioned the time factor. Albums compress time, and thus they can really warp the listener's perspective.
Yeah.
What's the oldest songs, and when were they written on Rumble Doll? And what's the newest song, and when was it written?
Well, the oldest song...
Or songs, you know.
Probably like Valerie was a song that I had for quite a long time, and I rewrote it. For my record, it was a song that I used to perform when I had my band in New York City, and it was a folk tune then, and I just changed it melodically a bit. And Rumble Doll was an older tune too, and also not even just when they're writing, they're emotionally older, and the person who was the character in Rumble Doll, by the time the album ends for me with Spanish Dancer, that person has changed a bit and grown up a bit, so that's really what I was just trying to do.
You're obviously a bright lady, so you probably know the...
on a good day.
You probably know the microscopic analysis that Rumble Doll, the album's going to go through, and particularly one of the songs that you mentioned is one of my favorites, Valerie. So it is important to context Valerie in time, isn't it?
Yeah, you might be thinking about another song, actually, because Valerie's done.
I'm sorry.
About Come Tomorrow.
It is early for me. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm in the Central Time Zone. I'm thinking of Come Tomorrow, and I stand corrected. Yeah, Come Tomorrow is the one I think that the time factor is important, don't you?
I do. You know, you're trying to make an emotionally truthful record and something that stands back. So when you look at it later in your life, you can go, yes, I really was going through those things. So I didn't really want to leave songs off my record because I was afraid of some outside interpretation. Do you know what I mean? Of course,
yeah.
I was afraid of it, but I thought, gee, I want to look back on my record and say, okay, that was me. That was clearly what I was going through. And to put too much emphasis on thinking, you know, what other people are going to think, that can lead to a lot of distortion, I think, for
yourself. Well, sure, and second guessing. Yeah, and second guessing on your part, right?
It's just not a healthy place to put your energies into.
We're talking with Patti Scalfa about the album Rumble Doll. Give me three singers, Patti, who knocked you out the first time you heard her and still influence you to this day.
Gee, you know, I like so many female singers. I like male singers too, but for me, because as a kid, the female singers were really inspired me. When I was really young, it had to be some of the early girl groups that were singing.
Like who?
That girl who sang that tune. He's so fine. Doolang. Was that the Chiffons?
Chiffons,
he's so
fine. Oh, yeah,
that Chiffons. It was just emotional. You know, I was really little. I was probably 8 or 9 when I heard that, and it was just very beautiful. But I liked a lot of different people from a lot of different areas. You know, I liked Dusty Springfield. I thought she was great.
Me too.
She's just beautiful, big emotional voice, but very restrained and womanly. It was very sexy to this day. She just has a really killer voice.
Right.
And, you know, and I liked Irma Thomas and Etta James.
Oh,
I love those women. And then I like a lot of folk singers and country. I really have a lot of people that I really just like and pull a little bit from. You know, on the record, there were a few people that I pulled from because I just liked them and I wanted that, just a little shadow of that on my record or something.
Absolutely. We're talking with Patti Scalfa about the album Rumble Doll. You are not alone with us today. You've brought
got
in
the fans with me.
got the fans and the band. Who's going to be joining us here in a little while?
My girlfriend, who sings and plays violin, Susie Tyrell, and Lisa Lowell will also be singing, and Louis Matoyer is going to be singing and playing some guitar.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Glad to have you along. It's a pleasure. Patti, tell me how your relationship with these two lady background singers that are with you today, how did that develop originally?
Well, we met a long time ago. Susie, what year did we meet? 77?
77.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And
1977.
And Lisa met her about a year after that, and we sang in a lot of different configurations. I had a band and sang original music around New York, and they sang with me in that. And they also had their bands, and I sang with them. And we played on the streets, the three of us, for a few, 2 years or 3 years, 2.5 years, in the summer. You know, in the spring and the summer, we'd go out in New York. We all lived in New York City, and we'd play on the corners, which was just a really great, great place to play. That was like one of my best memories of making music, was when we sang out.
No pressure.
It was very, just very free.
Just
very free. It's nice.
I'm going to throw a real curveball at you. And like I said, I remind you, this is on tape. So if you want to pass, go right ahead. Would you be able to reach back into your repertoire and pull out a song? I know you haven't rehearsed this. Maybe you haven't sung it since those days. Pull out a song that you would have sung on that street corner.
I don't want to hear your barroom talk, Virgo, whatever you've got on the rise.
Whoa, that's really nice.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm a Virgo. I
kind of
take that.
That was sweet. The harmonies are sweet.
Yeah.
That's really great. Describe that street corner that imaginary street corner that's going to be in our minds as we listen to you perform some of the songs from Rumble Doll this morning.
Well, we used to sing mostly was on 7th Avenue across the
Sheridan Square
down 7th Avenue.
The
and then the gay area was very, very supportive of us. I have to say they were probably pulled us through a lot of different evenings down on, we play on Christopher Street and Bleecker there. Yeah, and they were, that whole community was really good to us and really supportive.
I read an interview where you still have fond memories of that, that you used the word, you said it was very freeing. What, can you expand on that? What freedom did that give that maybe the trappings of, you know, a big-time record deal might not have?
Well, we, I think it was just, we were kind of militant at the time. It was like, we only played on the street. People would ask us to play in clubs, but we wouldn't play in a club because that was a sellout.
oh, playing clubs was a sellout.
Oh, yeah, so boy, forget a record deal, okay?
You must have had a peace sign on the patch of those jeans.
Oh, let me we discouraged any boyfriends who tried to enter the circle.
They were distractions, right?
They were, that's right.
Now, some things never change, Patty.
So it was good. It was a really beautiful way to make music and just to, we met a lot of very interesting people when we played out there. And it's a very immediate way to play your music, a very, very immediate way. People don't have to listen. They can go on or they can stay and listen. And it was just a wonderful time, actually.
You know, Marty Balin, the great singer and songwriter with the Jefferson Airplane and Starship, he said the same thing in that,
Did he used to do that?
Oh, yeah, in San Francisco. And to this day, he says it just never ceases to amaze him how long it takes now to get a song to the people. He said back then you'd write a song in the morning and you'd be singing it on the street that afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of true. A direct inject into the public without all the...
Oh, it is, and it's just so alive. You really learn to battle a lot of the external difficulties when you're out there singing.
We're talking with Patty Scalfa and about her solo album, Rumble Doll. You did your own art direction on this very attractive cover and insert. How did you develop that talent?
Oh, I really didn't do it myself. I helped I forget the guy's name who did my record.
We can look it up.
Yeah, but he was really nice, and he was very into being collaborative, which was wonderful, because so we picked out the pictures together and pasted them up together, and so it was fun. I like all that kind of stuff. It makes the whole record, you know, I spent so long on crafting the record, so when it came down to the cover, it felt funny just to give everything over to somebody and not have my own little personal touch in there.
Sure. Well, I'll say you're going to start a whole new fetish out there in the rock and roll. The small of the back is going to be the new fetish now.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yes, the small in the back. Never really thought of it until this Rumble Doll album.
My husband picked that picture. I wasn't even going to put that one on the cover. And he goes, no, put
good,
this one on.
Good call. He's not blind. Good call. How do you know my good buddy Mike Campbell from the Heartbreakers? And why did you choose to work with him as producer on Rumble Doll?
Do you know, I'd never met Mike.
You're kidding.
No, and so when it came to, I got my record deal right after the Born USA tour, took some tapes around that I had made while the tour was on, and shopped the deal after the tour ended, and then, but didn't start my record till after, the Amnesty tour, because right when I was about to go in and make my record, Bruce called and asked me if I wanted to do the Tunnel Love tour, which was going to be just about an 8-week tour to 12 weeks, and I thought, okay, I'll go do that tour and come back and start my record. But then Bruce and I got together and romantically, and that caused a tremendous amount of attention that I wasn't really comfortable with, and I knew I was making a emotional record, and I knew it was going to be a revealing record, so I didn't want to go back to work right away, so I waited a couple of years, and in 89 I was ready to go back to work, and somebody told me that Mike Campbell was starting to produce people, and I thought, gee, that's great. Somebody's from a completely different camp than the one I've been working with I've been working with Bruce since 1982-83. And so I sent him a tape, and he didn't get back to me right away, and I had dinner one night with Barbara Orbison, and she knew him. And
yes, that's true.
Yeah, she was wonderful, because she called him up the next day and took me over his house, and I met him, and I just liked him immediately. He just has a tremendous, he just really focused. He gave me my independence. He just, there was no Bruce shadow hanging over my head when he saw me. That was really clear that I could see that he saw me that way.
Do you think that's, excuse me for interrupting, but do you think that's possibly because He has so much music in him, and yet he knows what it's like to be part of a band with a very powerful persona in Tom Petty.
Yeah. I think that, and also that his playing style is so highly individual that it must be very centering to him, so he doesn't get into all that other kind of gray area, do you know?
Sure.
He's such an artist in his own right.
Yeah.
So he liked the tunes I'd given him, and so we worked together. I was very happy because he was very patient. It took us a while to make the record because I had two babies, and he went in the middle of making our record. He made a record with Tom and went out on tour with Tom. So it just took a little while, and he just hung in there and was, he just gave a lot of patience and lent his talent over to the project really beautifully.
You know, you're in the Guinness Book of World Records for using more LA studios on one album than anybody in history.
Is that so?
Yes.
Well, the thing is, first of all, I'm from New York. I lived in New York for 14 years, and a lot of my friends were New York studio musicians that I just grew up with, you know, so to speak, in town, and ended up playing on a lot of people's records. But when I went to LA, I really didn't know anybody out there, and Mike knew some of these people and turned me on to them, and they were wonderful guys. They played really well, and it was nice working with them. I got a chance to work with a lot of people that I'd always heard of. Do you know when you're on the East Coast and you hear the West Coast players? And I'd heard of them, but I'd never had a chance to work with them, and they were all wonderful.
So it wasn't trouble with daycare or couldn't find a babysitter or anything?
No.
Okay. Who kept the arrangements lean to focus on the song and the singer? Would you say that was something important to you, or did
Definitely.
Did Mike pick up on that?
That was complete. This whole record was a very, you know, it was a collaboration. It was I like to hear things. I'm a control freak, so I like to hear everything really pared down and very I like that kind of classic thing where there's not a lot of wasted notes and it's melodic and clear and lean. I like that.
I do too, and it worked beautifully on this album, but the songs have to be strong. Producers can fill in lots of holes with busy arrangements, but when you pare it down the way Rumble Doll has done, the songs have to be strong, and that's really a compliment to your songwriting and singing.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks. But I knew Michael, that's the kind of musician he is, so I knew when we made the record, I knew that we weren't going to end up with some really dense record with it overly produced or anything, because you could tell by who he was and how he played.
Yeah. Would you be so kind? Would you like to do us a song in the middle here? Because I've got a few more questions, but boy, I'll tell you, I'd like to. What would you like to do for us?
We're going to do Valerie.
Oh, I love this song.
Thanks.
I love them all, but this is great.
Thank you. Okay. To the east, the factory's standing like fire, breathing dragons against the sky. And from their throats, a scarlet river burns itself into smoky lullabies. Over neon and fluorescent skies, Valerie, can you hear those engines drone? I wanted to go to Mexico, but I'm stranded here alone, and once I knew a true love. It's been 3 years since he's gone, and if I could get that feeling back, I'd give up everything I own. 16 days since I left Corona, and I traveled to this carnival town near Alberndale, and I rode the coaster there on the fairground, twisted backbone of a beast that never heals.
and I left some skin on fortune's wheel. Valerie, can you hear those engines drone? I wanted to go to Mexico, but I'm stranded here alone. And once I knew a true love, it's been 3 years since he's gone. And if I could get that feeling back, I'd give up everything I own. Everything's in slow motion now in this little trails of dust down the road as they pass by. Valerie, can you hear those engines drone? I wanted to go to Mexico, but I'm stranded here alone. And once I knew a true love, it's been 3 years since he's gone. And if I could get that feeling back, I'd give up everything I
Okay, wait a minute. Can I talk to the producer? I thought they were going to perform live, not play the CD.
Yeah.
I was under the impression that this was going to be like live performance, and they weren't just going to, you know, I can play the CD at this end. That was amazing, you guys.
Oh, thank you.
That was spectacular. I'm serious. I'm no BS. I cannot. That was remarkable. I added just a touch of digital delay at this end, and my gosh, that was scary. My engineer was standing over there, and I think he thought we were playing a CD. That was mint. That was really nice. Thank you so much. That's Valerie, and it's such a pretty song from Rumble Doll. That's Patti Scalfa and friends in the studio here with us live on Q102. What was the first song you wrote, which you showed and played for Bruce? And on a 1 to 10 scale, just how intimidated were you?
Well, see, you know, I met Bruce probably in 1982. I met him before he asked me to do the Born in U.S. tour. 82, Toby? 82, 83, probably early 83, 82. And I'd always shown him my music, so it wasn't something that I can even go back and think, oh gee, what was the big day or anything.
Sure.
I'd been playing music, and so it was a natural, playing a music was a part of a relationship that was pretty natural.
Wow.
I mean, I'm sure the first time I was like,
yeah, he was pretty famous around those parts.
Sure. Do you know, we grew up in the same county. You know, I went to Asbury Park High School, so I'd always heard of him when I was a kid. So it wasn't as frightening to say when I worked with the Stones. That was just a little more, when I walked into the room.
Oh, boy.
That was a little more intimidating because you grew up and they were so far away. They're from England. They were so exotic. And it was just an untouchable situation. So when I worked for them, I was a little nervous before I met them. But then they were just great guys. But
wow.
But so Bruce, it was a little more natural because he was from the area I grew up in and everything.
you know, Bruce is a solitary songwriter for the most part. Does he offer input to your songs, or does he encourage it to be your vision?
Well, you know, I can't, you know, I'm pretty stubborn myself, so I didn't really, I would play him things that I had, I usually played him something when it was basically finished, and, you know, when I was making my record, I always played him, actually, I played him things mostly when they were almost at a finished end, because input at a certain point when you're still, like, creating your tune and creating the arrangement, it can be detrimental to the tune almost. It's better just to follow your vision and get it there, and then if you're having a problem, maybe ask somebody for some help or something. But so I really didn't. You know, Mike Campbell is a great musician, and I didn't want to undermine my situation with him, and I just felt really confident in the work that we were doing together. So, of course, I played everything for Bruce, but it wasn't the dynamic of me asking for help or anything.
I didn't think it was, and it shows. It really seems to be from you to us, and I think that's great. How is how's being a mommy twice over affected your songwriting?
Great. Well, you know, all these songs, I didn't. I had tunes about my children, but I didn't put them on my record because they really didn't fit in. You know, the album actually, emotionally in a chronological way, started a long time ago, and the completion of the record for me, the way it ended, didn't quite fit in songs about the children yet. But I would, it's probably going to be harder to find time to write songs. Anybody who's been to my house can contest to that. It's like, boy, I have two kids, and you know, my son is three, my daughter's a year and a half, and you try and give him as much time as you can. So it's difficult to kind of find it hard to carve out time for yourself without feeling really guilty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can really rehearse my everyone. Did I introduce everybody?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, they're all staying at my house right now, and so we rehearse, and then when I'm done rehearsing, it's like, oh, kid time. It's like, oh.
It's band rehearsal and daycare.
Well, my son, he listens, you know, and as soon as we start singing harmonies, he starts bopping around.
That's great. How do you think it's, you know, being a mother, and I understand you've got a big new release coming in January.
Yes, yes.
Congratulations. Congratulations on your upcoming release. How has it affected, you think, your songwriting perspective, having kids?
You know, I haven't, the songs that I've written after I had my children, were a little different from this material. I think before you have children and before you have a really powerful relationship, you have a lot of that space and that emptiness to write. For me, I was just very lonely. So I had a lot of that area to walk into that was probably just a little more melancholic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now that I have kids, I don't visit that area as much. And not because you don't feel those things, but you just don't have time to, really. Do you know? You just...
Don't you think? Yeah, and the whole world to them, everything is hope. Everything is today and tomorrow. So melancholy really doesn't fit in, does it?
Oh, yeah. The whole self-absorbed thing that I used to love to be in myself. I don't have time for it anymore.
The tortured artist effect. Yeah.
My kids don't buy it.
They don't buy into that. They don't buy into that. That's good. We're talking with Patti Scialfa on Q102. You know, when you did Valerie, all I could think of was if Thelma and Louise had not died at the end of the movie, Valerie would be the theme song for the sequel. What?
I didn't think of that.
I mean,
it's a good idea.
It would. It's the buddy, instead of a buddy guy, buddy guy movie. It's a buddy girl type of song.
Definitely,
it really is.
Definitely.
Wonderful song, and who knows? Maybe. Knowing Hollywood, the car probably landed in a river and they floated downstream, and there will be a
this
sequel.
This is true.
Sequel.
Yeah. Do you, Patti?
The parachute in the trunk.
That's it. That's it. The parachute. Hey, Batman had one. So, Patti, do you know Lyle Lovett?
Oh, I have met him. I have met him. He's a wonderful man. It's funny because before I met him, Bruce and I used to play a tune of his. We used to listen to his record, but we had this favorite song that. If I had a pony.
Oh, yeah.
That one.
It's a great song. He sang that for me on the radio about 2 weeks ago here.
He's wonderful.
He's wonderful, and his time is definitely happening. If you bumped into Lyle Lovett down at Pink's having a chili dog, and he asked your advice, and Lyle looked at you and said, How did you handle the feeding frenzy of the media, and does it ever let up? What advice would you give him?
Well, I can't say to give advice to Lyle.
No, I'm saying this is hypothetical. This is me asking, but...
I don't know. You know, for me personally, I just don't... You know, you just don't put that much weight into it. It's just it's a distorting aspect of your life, and it's something that Bruce has a tremendous amount of fame, and there's wonderful things that come with that. But there's also, you know, there's also that downside of a lot of attention, which can be a little distorting. And I for me personally, when I get attention through Bruce's stuff, you know, I just find I try not to feed into it. I don't seek it out. I don't read it. And I don't, you're going to do mope around about it.
It is a real factor. And the reason why I can say that, at least for Lyle, is because he has canceled every single one of his interviews with the exception of mine. And so we had the opportunity to talk about that fact in depth. And I thought, boy, if anybody could say, you know, here's what's going to happen, and here's a piece of advice, it would be hypothetically.
He had more of a career. You know, he has a real full career when it happened to him. So he was, you know, in that thing where he had to talk to the press. I had no record out, so there was no reason for me to talk to the press, and that's why, you know, I waited a little bit, but. I'm sure he's doing fine. He's a great guy.
He sure is, a very talented guy. We're talking with Patty Scalfa. I can hear the guitar starting to get nervous. That either means
that's me.
All right,
no,
that either means let's wrap this chump up or
I get nervous of those kind of questions for some reason.
Or the horses are in the starting gate and they want to run. You got another one for her?
Yes, we do.
I'm a ready Teddy, Patty Scalfa.
Okay. Go ahead, Lewis.
When I was young, I believed in everything. I turned my rag man into king. And I carved him a soft world from hard stone. With a laurel crown and a velvet throne. 'Cause in my imagination was a world no one could touch. No, I had a fascination for little things that don't mean much in life. Now tomorrow comes abandoning rainy ponies and a little brass ring. Well, I got that ring, I pulled it down, and my little girl's world came tumbling down. 'Cause in my imagination was a world no one could touch. No, I had a fascination for little things that don't mean much in life. Things I treasure fade away and leave me standing here alone with no way back to the world I know. 'Cause in my imagination was a world no one could touch. No, I had a fascination for little things that don't mean my imagination. imagination,
my imagination,
my imagination,
my imagination,
in my imagination,
in my imagination.
You did it to me again. That is, wow, that is so nice. Patti Scalfa, tell me, I've got to let you go. I know you've been doing this all morning, and we really appreciate you taking the time to do it. It's a real pleasure to make your acquaintance, even over the satellite, very much. Is there a chance that we'd be able to see you, Patti, doing your music possibly, you know, live?
Definitely. You know, I'm having my baby in January, so... If I feel okay, after I get through, we're going to do about a month of this radio stuff, you know, and after we're done with that and I feel good and I feel healthy, I'm going to do some live dates. But I got to wait to see how I'm going to feel.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. That has got to be first.
Because I want to go out. Uh-huh. You know, I'm dying to go out.
I'll bet.
But got to wait to see how I feel first.
Tell me if, it's hard for me to pick a favorite. I've got about half a dozen songs on your album that are tied for favorites, but one that I really love personally is the song "Charm Light." Tell me about that one.
It's funny, we've been trying to work that up lately.
Hey, you want to rehearse now?
Oh, I don't. Well, you're taped, right?
Yeah,
we could try it.
Oh, cool. Would you really take a request from a lonely DJ in Dallas?
Yeah, we'll try it. We haven't played it in a couple of days.
"Charm Light."
If it doesn't come out right. Do me a favor, don't play it, okay?
You got a deal. It'll just be on Redbeard Records and 8-track cassette.
Okay. Let's see. The words.
Yeah, what are the words? Let's see here.
I just had to make a little cheat sheet here. Okay, let's go.
Okay.
All right.
You okay?
You know I got a string of kisses tattooed down my arm from the love of lonely men that always came to home. Tattooed down my arm to my fingertips. You ain't the only lonely man that I've ever kissed. But when the night is sinking low, come on, baby, oh, don't let go. 'Cause when you turn that charm light on me, yeah, you turn all the wrong in my world right. When you turn that charm light on me, make it so pretty, make it all seem right. You know I saw those fallen crosses, those broken stones of faith. Knew I could name the sorrow that haunts the side of your face. I could name the sorrow and somehow set you free. I knew you'd be the one who'd do the same for me. So when the night is sinking low, come on baby, oh, here we go. 'Cause when you turn that charm light on me, yeah, you turn all the wrong in my world right. When you turn that charm light on me, make it so pretty, make it all seem right. Now I know love ain't
ain't no fairy tale. He's so pretty or so pure. There's a train of unforgiveness for things that came before. But I know who I am, and I wash myself clean of all that muddy water and all those railroad dreams. So when the night is sinking low, come on, baby, oh, here we go. When you turn that charm light on me, yeah, you turn all the wrong in my world right. When you turn that charm light on me, make it so pretty, make it all seem right. When you turn that charm light on me, when you turn that charm light on me, turn the light on me now. Turn the light on me. Turn the light on me now. Turn the light on me.
What more could I ask for? Oh, thank you so much. Thank what a personal you. Favor you did for me. I love that song.
Thank you.
And you nailed it.
And we hadn't done that in a couple of days, yeah, so yeah. we broke it in today, so that's good.
Well, I called an audible at the line of scrimmage, and you guys picked it up and scored a TD on that. Nice job. Patty Scalfa with Susie Tyrell.
Lisa Lowell.
Lisa Lowell. You know what?
Yeah, you got the names wrong, so Rocky, let me help you out with this.
Rocky put it, gave me pow. Okay. I'm sorry, Lisa.
And this is Louis Metoyer.
I'm sorry, Louis.
Playing guitar and singing.
Rocky, you're fired. thank you guys so much for doing this today.
Oh, thank you. It's really nice talking to you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Patty, and to meet all of you. And we certainly hope we get to see you on the road. We understand, though, that, like I said, that that big release coming in January, that definitely takes precedence. And congratulations from all of us.
Thank you very
much. On the album Rumble Doll and on the new one coming. And come see us down in Texas.
Oh, I will.
All righty. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Bye. Patty Scalfa on Q102.